Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. Hey, before we start the show, I think you should be getting our newsletter. It's possible, I accept, that you do not listen to every podcast that we publish every week and get a chance to read every news story. If you miss anything, it's all summarized in our weekly newsletter. And to sign up, just go to our website, CanadaLandShow.com, and there will be a pop-up that says, I think you should be getting our newsletter. I think you should. Go check it out. Jaskaran Sandhu, former executive director of World Sick Organization, fellow at Civic Action Greater Toronto Hamilton Area, occasional Canada Land contributor. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Today we're going to talk about Aaron O'Toole. He is protecting the most vulnerable members of society against a movie that he absolutely has not seen and seems quite confused about. And Terry Maleski dusts off his mustache to troll an entire ethnicity. Again, good to have you here.
Terry Maleski just bringing great shame to mustaches everywhere.
This episode is brought to everyone by Sean Spencer, Peter James, Samantha Ponting, Edith Sinclair, Ian McNeil, Kathy Smart, Leanne Lankinen, and Rhiannon.
My name's Rhiannon, and I'm a freelance journalist in Whitehorse. I support Canada Land because I think it's important to pay for the media you consume and the media that you want to exist. Even though I find Jesse insufferable at times, we need media criticism in Canada. And as a journalist myself, I want to support it financially.
Vous faisiez quoi à la guerre?
On va danser au concours.
Je danse avec vous. Quoi?
Well, this movie, Cuties, it sexualizes 11-year-old girls, has them dancing like strippers, has them in very suggestive sexual roles, and it's frankly disgusting.
Cuties, Jaskaran. A lot of people talking about Cuties. Here's the new leader for the Conservative Party of Canada, Aaron O'Toole. He said on Twitter, I'm a dad who is deeply disturbed by this Netflix show. Childhood is a time of innocence. We must do more to protect children. This show is exploitative and wrong. And he said that as he retweeted the True North Center, who are also mad about Cuties, claiming that it sexualizes 11-year-old girls, that Netflix is sexualizing 11-year-old girls, and the Truth North Center, of course, is the media wing of an anti-immigrant think tank. Any thoughts on Cuties, Jaskaran?
Well, I think this is typical of Jesse Fashion, where you're finding negative things to cover here. Why aren't you celebrating the fact that Aaron O'Toole quote tweeted True North, a fellow independent media that's challenging the mainstream, just like yourself?
Because True North, in as much as it is a media group, I guess that's just a statement of fact that they create media. It is the media wing of an anti-immigration think tank. We got to back up here. Like, Cuties is not what it is being described as. And that's partly Netflix's fault.
Yeah.
It's understandable that this movie offended people when you look at the difference between the original poster for Mignon. I'm sorry, am I saying that right? Do you know?
No, Mignones? No. I'm not very good at French.
Mignon. I think I turned it into a kind of a Spanish thing there. Where it's a much more wholesome poster where these like tweens are just kind of walking down the road. The American version, the Netflix Canadian American poster, is a very hypersexualized picture of the stars of this movie, but it completely misrepresents the movie. I'll confess I haven't seen the whole thing yet, but I've dug into it a little bit. Barry Hertz from the Globe and Mail, he jumped on this and offered a critique to Aaron O'Toole. And he said, Cuties excoriates the very things that people like Aaron O'Toole claim it propagates. 100% guarantee you that Aaron O'Toole has not seen Cuties. And Cuties is a film, not a show. And then wrote about that for the Globe. And then Barry Hertz was set upon by a frightening, massive wave of internet lunacy that I think is associated with the whole QAnon thing, and that believes that child exploitation is like Tom Hanks is in on it, and so is Oprah, and Netflix is a plot to hand over your daughter to human trafficking rings. What has Aaron O'Toole stumbled into?
Yeah, this is what surprised me right away. Like, it wasn't so much that someone has an opinion on what is effectively really bad marketing. The two things that stood out was, first, quote tweeting True North. I think that sends an important signal as much as any. Aaron O'Toole or the Conservative Party of Canada is going to be looking towards folks like True North and propagating or pushing messaging, which is kind of surprising, but not really. And then secondly, this is definitely has the feeling of folks reading the headline of a story, but not actually reading the story and forming opinions on it that they think are very true. The movie is actually the opposite of what Aaron O'Toole or a lot of folks in the right wing, especially down south, are trying to make this out to be. Criticize the marketing. By all means, criticize it. The movie itself, though, is actually aligned with what they're saying, is that we're exploiting kids in a way that's just not healthy. And it's society pressure that's doing it. On that last point there from that story in the Globe and Mail, like, is this really what the Conservative Party wants to be pushing right now? Like, this is what's important. This is what requires immediate and direct attention from the leader of the official opposition. It's kind of strange.
Yeah, quoting Hertz's piece in the Globe, he writes, you know, Cuties is a nuanced, tender, and powerful coming-of-age story focusing on a young Senegalese child who is torn between her devotion to her religious family and her desire to fit in with her secular Parisian friends. It's a clear indictment of the choices that contemporary society forces upon young girls. There's a couple things happening, one of which I think is ages old and one of which is scary and new. Conservatives just sort of seizing upon a piece of art that seems to, on the surface, you know, be it like, you know, Robert Mapplethorpe back in the day or whatever, like to people who don't really have experience with that work of art, it emotionally pushes a button of, you know, moral panic. That's an old thing the conservative politicians have been doing for a very long time. But the aspect of this that I think is concerning is, you know, Canadian conservative politics has been trying to figure out how to orient itself in relation to the massive wave of conspiracy theory, online hate. I mean, there's, you know, it's a very, very complicated system. And I don't mean to, it's not just one thing, but it's a huge and at times frightening force that has the ability and has the numbers to actually form a political base that can get people elected in the United States, but has yet to prove itself such in Canada. And, you know, we've seen this kind of dance where our politicians are like, well, there's a lot of Canadian support for these memes and, you know, this whole QAnon thing of like
all these people in their basements who are think that they're rooting out child predators, and they're searching the backgrounds of videos for symbolism, and, you know, the Trudeau Foundation, this. And I saw this with the Wii story, where there are people who are saying, yeah, go get them, Canada Land, because they're involved in international child trafficking. Absolutely not. There's not a shred of evidence. Like, you know, to people who see the world through these like conspiracy goggles, everything starts to make sense in this lunatic. Anyhow, Aaron O'Toole is very early on trying to, like, you know, orient himself. And I think that in every other way, he's been careful not to associate himself with these really divisive and ugly and dank strains. But and maybe he didn't know where this was coming from. It just seemed like an easy win for him. But, you know, there be dragons.
This is kind of the interesting time we live in, right? Like, conspiracy theories are always there. In the past, though, if you had a conspiracy theory and you brought it up to a room of, like, friends or peers, you would get enough diversity of thought that we can all laugh about the conspiracy theory and kind of move on with our lives. What's happening nowadays is that you can find a critical mass of folks who think just like you, curate your list accordingly, and you never really come up against reality. And you just go deeper and deeper into this hole. Like, all of us have buddies who believe in this stuff to some degree. And we can fight them on our WhatsApp chats. But at the end of the day, they have a big group of other folks they can go to and reinforce their opinions on these matters. That's a dangerous part of it, right? And outlets like True North or otherwise, who will continue to, you know, push out content that may help amplify or confirm some of their beliefs, is also really troubling. And Aaron O'Toole, or a leader of the Conservative Party, you know, quote tweeting or retweeting from some of these sources, just continues to lend credibility to these platforms, which is what I think is actually really concerning. You know, people are always going to pass judgment off headlines or posters without actually diving into the real content. This is an issue as old as time. And I think Netflix was correct in apologizing to the filmmaker that for essentially framing this movie in a way that it shouldn't be, and not allowing folks to kind of see it for what it is and misrepresent it for what it's not.
Yeah, I just hope that the firewall we have between this gross culture is strong, and I worry that it's really porous, and I just don't want to see like dudes in Saskatchewan showing up at some pizza like place with a gun. Like, when you can convince people that they are protectors of children, it kind of justifies any kind of behavior.
Well, yeah, it provides them a platform where they think they're acting in the right. Like, they're in the pure, they're in the know, they're actually doing something that no one else is taking seriously. And what the hell is wrong with everyone else? I think the one thing that Canada has going for it that the United States doesn't in these matters is, like, there's not enough critical mass here, not yet at least, to make this a force that pushes decision makers in a certain direction. Whereas in the States, you know, 10 times the size, it's easier to find enough folks to get together to become a force to reckon with. In Canada, it's a little harder to do that. But, you know, things can change. Like, it's not like we're immune from what's happening in the States. Everything that happens in the States, we feel. I see it. I see it with more regularity just in my own circles, purely anecdotal and maybe just reflection of me and my circles, that you see more of these conspiracy theories pop up with a certain amount of conviction you just wouldn't see in the past.
Well, when you've got, like, you know, mainstream, really reasonable looking people like Aaron O'Toole moving these ideas and these memes on, into acceptability and into the mainstream, that's how you build critical mass. That's how you launder these theories.
Which is why it needs to be called out right when you see it.
Just, Karen, this is your first time. You've written for our website, but this is your first time on Shortcuts. Maybe you know that we try to duly note things that might otherwise go overlooked. Have you brought something to duly note today?
Yeah, I have. While it has received some ink recently, Bill 21 is a issue that continues to be a problem for my Muslim, Jewish, Sikh brothers and sisters in Quebec, as well as others who practice their faith freely, as they should in this country, in the face of so-called secularism. And Aaron O'Toole came out the other day, the first time publicly since becoming leader, essentially saying, well, he personally has issues with it. He's not going to do anything about it. But then in French, gave a stronger answer in support of it by saying he will always support secularism. Now, I don't know about you and everyone else, but my definition of secularism isn't infringing on people's religious freedoms. It's essentially just not getting in the way of it as a state. I think that's something that needs a lot more attention. This was something that hasn't gone away since the election, and it continues to be an ongoing problem for folks in that province.
Duly noted. I have one to share with you.
I'm all yours.
Guess what? It's about We.
The greatest charity on earth.
I'll try to keep it brief, but listen, it's been a week now since We Charity announced that it's finished. You know, show's over.
And you destroyed it, didn't you?
I don't know how you can destroy something that is still here and going to be here for a very long time. And the actual, you know, the reports of its demise, I think, have been greatly exaggerated. But that's what they said. They're finished. They're going to close up shop in Canada. The Kielbergers are stepping down. And I think that that announcement is starting to have its intended effect. There were a few days of media scrutiny, some really good reports, actually. I don't think anyone was buying that. I mean, there was a lot of good coverage as to why those words should be viewed skeptically and how the charity's not going anywhere anytime soon and all the other entities are still with us and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it's been a week and now the scandal is receding from the headlines. It's no longer in that like hot topics bar at the top of the Globe and Mail's website. It will flare up again when Parliament is back in session and the inquiries come back to life. But so far, I think that this is a Kielberger strategy that's been working. I mean, remember, they made that big announcement hours before a Raptors playoff game, which I understand some people care deeply about. Their kind of exclusive interview with CTV News, Lisa Laflamme of CTV, their media partner, that interview took place, you know, the same night as that Raptors game. And I'm not sure how many people actually watched it, but I did. And I want to duly note one bewildering moment in that interview, among many, but a moment that I think has been widely overlooked. This concerns like a gaping hole in their story, their narrative that the reason why they need to shut down We Charity in Canada is because of money, essentially, that they don't have enough of it because of the pandemic, because of the political scandal, the political freight train, as they call it. The donations have dried up. There's more money going out than coming in. That's all very plausible to me. But they say they need to salvage what they have left, all that real estate. They're going to use that money to salvage what is most important. Every cent of that, of what they have left before it all disappears, is needed to protect the most important work that they do, the international development work they do in Africa and elsewhere, because that money literally saves lives. And Craig Kielberger says that again and again, that they're literally saving lives abroad. And the discrepancy is that they also have as part of their narrative that they just sort of abandoned $5 million. To the government, that they had every right to recoup. They spent $5 million on the volunteer grant program. And then when there was a lot of political pressure around that money, they said, oh, no, it's okay. It's within our rights to ask for that back, but we're not going to. We're just going to eat that expense. And now we're told that all that money could be saving lives in Africa. And CTV anchor Lisa Laflamme does a great job of pressing them on that point.
The cost to We, you say, is $5 million and that you've elected to waive your right to repayment on that. How could any charity even think about eating $5 million?
We wanted to waive the repayment of that because we wanted to ensure that Canada didn't bear a burden on this entire experience. But to your point, I'd like to issue a challenge to the Prime Minister. So we didn't have to waive that $5 million in expenses. So that's an extra $5 million the government has. I hope the Prime Minister gives that $5 million directly to the students who signed up for the program and who never got their scholarship this fall.
But, okay, that's an interesting challenge to the Prime Minister, but to your charity, today you are making a huge announcement, and a week ago you announced you're eating $5 million. It doesn't make sense.
But it's the right thing to do.
And I want to duly note the Kielbergers' answer.
Very noble. Duly noted.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter-like seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get, like, anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding, like, the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. Jaskaran, I spent, a good year with a Twitter feed clogged up with Terry Malevsky tweeting angry things at me the last time that I talked about his, I think it was with reference to his interview with Jagmeet Singh. He got the first CBC interview with Jagmeet. He was filling in from retirement. He came in on Power and Politics, and he pressed Jagmeet to make a loyalty oath to decry the architect of the Air India, because he's Sikh, he had to denounce a Sikh terrorist.
Yes.
I had a conversation with Omar Mwalim about that, and we paid a steep price for daring to criticize him. And at great length and a great difficulty, that died down. And then just last week, suddenly I got carried. I didn't even tweet. I didn't do anything. I'm out of this, man. And there were like 400 tweets that I was tagged in where Terry Malevsky was fighting with people and you were one of them. What the hell happened? Did it just all happen again? What happened?
Yeah, look, there's been a running battle for the last 2-3 years between, the Sikh community and Terry Malevsky, but also in this great story, Terry Malevsky and I are arch enemies. And
yeah.
And it actually gives me great purpose in my life. I'm not going to lie. The Sikh community has always had an issue with Terry Malevsky's perspective and views on the Sikh community in Canada, the Khalistan movement, which is the Sikh sovereignty movement based in India over the 80s and 90s and continues to this day. There's a lot of political free speech around this, a lot of thought, a lot of debate within the community on this. But Terry Malevsky thinks he knows better. And he likes to tell Sikhs what Sikhs are doing, which annoys and irks a lot of Sikhs. If there's one thing that unifies us as a people, it's our collective disdain for Terry Malevsky. Because he does such a garbage job of explaining the Khalistan issue, of explaining the Sikh community and the diaspora, like understanding what the Khalistan movement is. He does such a piss poor job. But the problem is because he was, until recently, a legitimate journalist, at least in the eyes of the mainstream, he had a platform that we just couldn't replicate or compete with. And if you look at like the previous generation, like before us, who we as a community collectively call with great love, actually, our uncles and our aunties, they couldn't effectively fight Terry because of just how asymmetrical like the platforms were. That changed, obviously, with the younger generation. You got Twitter, you got different social media platforms where you can go toe-to-toe with the guy and start really challenging him. And over time, this has increasingly irked him and angered him. And a lot of it is on, you know, like, we take great enjoyment in doing that. So a lot of back and forth, obviously, and then those India trip with Trudeau, which, you know, brought out a lot of this again. I'm going to fast forward a bunch because I can talk about this for literally hours. Recently, Terry Malevsky put out a report with the McDonnell Laurier Institute. And I use the term report very loosely. It's more like a grade 10 high school essay. He puts out this report and he essentially insinuates that anything you see around Sikh advocacy, regardless of what it is pushed and backed and actually the work of the Pakistan government. And he completely dismisses the Sikh community. So he didn't dismiss the Sikh community advocacy. He really launches really strange and outlandish claims that have no backing and no evidence. And that really angered a lot of people. it's the first time I've ever seen this, really unprecedented. 50 academics, either that are sick or work in spaces that touch upon the Sikh community or Sikh history, penned a letter to the McDonnell Laurier Institute, to Terry Maleski and Ojo Lassange, so former British Columbia Premier and former federal Liberal cabinet minister, as well as Shovaloy Majumdar, who is a MLI program director and a Monk senior fellow for foreign policy, who assists in writing the foreword here, dismissing and calling out this report and asking that it gets retracted, and an apology is given because of just how poorly it's written. This thing will never pass a grade 10 social science class, let alone a legitimate peer review. It doesn't triangulate claims. There's no academic rigor. There's no contextually based journalistic analysis. Nothing that you would normally associate with the report. So it begs the question, right, for your listeners. Either these 50 plus academics are Pakistani funded terrorists, or Terry Maleski is an idiot. That's the grand question you have to ask yourself.
Well, those are a lot of unkind things about Terry Maleski, who is not here to defend himself.
Good.
And you know, this is a media criticism show where we criticize things in the media, and this, you know, report was released, and then there was a social media backlash, and then there were other repercussions. And I think that in theory, it's okay for Terry Maleski to have a different opinion than a lot of people, but I'm going to very foolishly endeavor to try to get my head around this and summarize this, and please tell me when I get something wrong here.
Yes.
This is my outsider's perspective on this, to try to boil it down, is that, you know, why is he so engaged with this in the first place? I think he hangs his hat of his whole career on his coverage of the tragic Air India bombing. Let's give him some benefit of the doubt that he feels some sense of, a journalistic crusader's, nobody cared about the victims of this, or nobody cared as much as him, or he was their advocate in some way, and he's going to carry that torch. I think that's, let's say that that's legitimately how he feels. But in his coverage for the CBC, an unfortunately titled piece called Samosa Politics that aired on National CBC News.
Yes.
Through his interview with Jagmeet Singh, this is asymmetrical warfare. He's entitled to his opinion, you're entitled to yours, but he had the CBC. The community had nothing of the sort. And where the ideological rift seems to happen is that, if I got this straight, he wants to define the independence movement, the Khalistani movement, as pretty much synonymously equivalent to terrorism.
Yes.
And essentially, it's sort of hard to take any Khalistani position that isn't pro-terrorist, that isn't glorifying and venerating this terrorist murderer. And also, he asserts that Khalistanism is just like a totally fringe thing, that you know, it's really only, even within the Sikh community, kind of a radical fringe that's into this at all. And the Sikh community keeps saying, no, that's not accurate. A, we're not all radicals, we're not all into violent uprising, and we're not all terrorists. And B, it's not a tiny fringe. Do I have this right so far?
Yeah, look, and I'll say straight up, there's legitimate questions that a journalist can ask about this, right? There's legitimate stuff that he can dig into and present and have a conversation about. The issue is multifold. When I wrote that piece for Canada Land, it was about the fact that the Sikh voices are often cast aside or ignored as part of this coverage, which was an issue that's consistently presented itself at the CBC, especially during Terry Maleski's tenure. And as far as the other point you made there about, you know, trying to say that Khalistan is synonymous with terrorism is just outright wrong. What's missing really is the historical context. The Sikh people were an independent kingdom till 1850, and then spent 90 or 100 years under British rule, and then post-independence, part of India. But there's a lot of historical context that led to the movement. And then the argument around, well, it's fringe. It really isn't. And the Khalistan movement is very diverse, and the conversations that happen within the community is very diverse. You know, I get quoted in this McDonnell Laurier Institute report, and it's like a really odd quote that he includes, a tweet that I sent out, where I essentially make the claim that if this is such a fringe concept and such a fringe movement, why is it that the leader of the Akal Takht, and this is like a really brutal comparison, but it's just very hard to kind of align this with like a more Western, like Judeo-Christian kind of understanding, but like the Akal Takht is like the Vatican. Mm-hmm. The Jathedar, like the leader of the Akal Takht, is kind of like the Pope. Terrible comparison, but it's like the closest I can give you.
Sure.
He's on record saying the Khalsan movement is a legitimate movement. If India was to give us Khalsan, we would take it. Like, this is something that is of utmost concern to the community. That just happened, like, literally, that happened actually a couple of days ago, again. And then the quote that I used was from about a month or two ago. Like, this is anything but fringe when, like, the actual temporal leadership and center of the Sikh world is talking about it as well. And then within the diaspora, what Terry Maleski and others try to say is, this is a fringe movement, but it's also a fringe move that only exists because Pakistan is making it exist, which strips any agency that we have as a people to have these conversations. And it kind of casts this misconception that somehow that any kind of lobbying or any kind of conversation that happens around this from a minority community like mine is somehow dubious. And as a result of like foreign funding, or we have like dual loyalties of some sort, or that we shouldn't be taken seriously whatsoever. And then there's the final piece, right? Like the 80s and 90s saw what the Sikh community sees as a genocide of the Sikh people. We saw attack of our center. So again, imagine the Vatican or Mecca getting attacked and bombed. It's a very troubled past that we're allowed as a community to talk about and advocate on because justice is still outstanding. In fact, some of the politicians that were involved in the targeted state-sponsored killing of Sikhs around India were promoted and are actually still in power. Justice has never been provided, and these people walk freely. So any advocacy around the human rights stuff is also casted in the same kind of dubious light that Terry Maleski is trying to put on this, which is just so stripped of any reality.
So who's right and who's wrong? Who speaks for the Sikh community, Terry Maleski or the Sikh community? Well, we kind of have an answer to that question because 50 of the most prominent academic Sikhs all signed this letter decrying this report and quoting from its introduction, which is really, I think the kids say, problematic. In the intro, decries steady and predictable drumbeat of victimization, persecution, and genocide commemoration presented as steps to assist a community in need of healing. Like, it's not a piece of journalism. It's really an opinion piece where if you apply that to anybody else or like, you know, Black Lives Matter movement in relation to slavery or Jews talking about the Holocaust, a steady and predictable drumbeat of victimization.
Well, it's like, here comes the Jews talking about the Holocaust again. Oh my God.
Like, fuck you, buddy.
Yeah, seriously.
And also this removal of agency, as you point out in this, like, oh no, this is all Pakistan putting them up to it. And then saying that in Pakistan, jihadist groups have made common cause with Sikh separatists against their shared enemy, India. As I read this, it's not simply that the Sikh community is offended by Maleski. It's that he continues to have this privileged space of, this think tank report from, the McDonnell Laurier Institute to say these things. And then Indian embassies all around the world are retweeting the report. There is this disparity of power. So like why we're talking about this in the form of a critical chat on this show and not like a debate that I would put in a journalistic package on our Monday show is because this guy has more platform than he probably deserves. And he's certainly not going to get a piece of this one.
This screams white privilege, right? Like Terry Maleski at one point wrote a story about Sikhs, and now he's seen as an expert whose voice on the Sikh community is more important than those from the Sikh community itself. Which is why I think like this academic letter was so powerful. Like this is unprecedented. This has never happened before. And I can tell you for a fact, like those academics that lent their names, like some of them are chairs of Sikh studies. They're from Harvard, they're from Yale, they're from UBC, they're from like leading institutions in North America. The actual issue here is Terry Maleski and a really, really poor, haphazard kind of analysis of the issues, right? And of the Sikh community.
No, man. The issue isn't Terry Maleski. Terry Maleski is a retired CBC journalist who the CBC has asked him to remove CBC from his Twitter handle, okay? Terry Maleski can be an old retired man who thinks whatever he wants to think. The issue here is that the Canadian establishment trades platforms and privilege and a big megaphone amongst itself in perpetuity. And you never age out of your establishment status and you can never lose it by saying dumb shit. Like once you're in, you're in. I mean, I think that the galling thing here is that even in his sort of afterlife of I think, afflicting your community, here he is like zombified by the McDonnell Laurier Institute saying these things on a big stage again. And it's a Canada thing.
You bring up this point that like, I've never seen this before either, where every single consulate, like embassy from Tajikistan to North Macedonia to Canada, immediately retweets and shares this report as if it's like this grand, see, we told you guys moment. And the establishment in Canada provided that at the cost of its own citizens, right? Of six in Canada, and completely ignore like an actual thorough analysis of this issue. It's such, like, it's garbage. And we talked about the foreword there where they talk about this drumbeat. That came from Ojo Dasange and Chevaloy Majumder. And both of those guys, they're not even six. Like, you have three people speaking on this report directly about the Sikh community in a way that's actually quite offensive. And none of them are Sikh. None of them are speaking from the community. And one of the scholars brought up this point, what she found really shocking. You have 17 sources in this whole report, and not a single one of them is academic. They're secondary sources. And this is what you're building your entire thesis on, the community. My good friend, Harman Kondola, out in Edmonton, we've had conversations about this 100 times, about, you know, how do we actually respond to this in a way where we're not just pushed aside and cast aside as dubious characters that are bought out by Pakistan. And it finally happened with these academics, which is why I think this is such like an important little moment for Sikhs in this country, but also an important moment in fighting against that establishment that is actually, quite frankly, the root of the problem.
Jaskaran, that's Canada Line Shortcuts for today. Thank you for joining me for it.
Well, thank you for having me, Rhett.
That's what we do. You can email me at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read what you send. We're on Twitter at CanadaLand. Jaskaran, where can people find you?
At @JaskaranSandhu_ on Twitter. That's where I do most of my stuff. And you can see me rage against the machine there.
Our website is CanadaLandShow.com, where I think you should sign up for our newsletter. It's really easy. Go do it. This episode is produced by Tiffany Lamb. Our managing editor is Andrea Schmidt. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. If you like what we do, please support us.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.